Where does the search for Jesus begin? Stay tuned. Dr. R.C. Sproul will answer that next on Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition. Welcome to this Christmas weekend edition of Renewing Your Mind with teacher and theologian Dr. R.C. Sproul. Dr. Sproul is also the senior minister of preaching and teaching at St. Andrew's, a Reformed congregation in Sanford, Florida. Do you have friends or family members who appear to be searching for God? Perhaps they consider themselves spiritual with no particular religious affiliation. Perhaps they recognize their need for something more out of life, and that there must be someone or something who can give their life meaning. They read all kinds of books on spirituality and are somewhat conversant on religious matters. For these people, it seems that they're searching for God, but for some reason have not found Him yet. Today on Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition, we're continuing an expositional tour through the Gospel of John. In today's message, Dr. Sproul will explain where the search for Jesus really begins and why so many people have not found Him. Let's join Dr. Sproul for more on that.
We continue now with our study of the Gospel according to St. John. And this morning's lesson is from the fourth chapter, beginning at verse 1. Chapter 4 of John begins with these words, "Therefore, when the Lord knew that the Pharisees had heard that Jesus made and baptized more disciples than John, though Jesus himself did not baptize, but his disciples, he left Judea and departed again to Galilee. But he needed to go through Samaria. And so he came to a city of Samaria, which is called Sychar, near the plot of ground that Jacob gave to his son Joseph. Now Jacob's well was there. Jesus, therefore, being wearied from his journey, sat thus by the well, and it was about the sixth hour. A woman of Samaria came to draw water, and Jesus said to her, 'Give me a drink.' For his disciples had gone away into the city to buy food. And then the woman of Samaria said to him, 'How is it that you, being a Jew, ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman? For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans.' Jesus answered and said to her, 'If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, "Give me a drink," you would have asked him, and he would have given you living water.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, you have nothing to draw with, and the well is deep. Where then do you get that living water? Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us the well, drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?' Jesus answered and said to her, 'Whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst, but the water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, give me this water, that I may not thirst, nor come here to draw.' Jesus said to her, 'Go, call your husband, and come here.' The woman answered and said, 'I have no husband.' Jesus said, 'You have said well, 'I have no husband. For you have had five husbands, and the one whom you now have is not your husband. In that you spoke truly.' The woman said to him, 'Sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Our fathers worshipped on this mountain, and you Jews say that in Jerusalem is the place where one ought to worship.' And Jesus said to her, 'Woman, Believe me, the hour is coming when you will neither on this mountain nor in Jerusalem worship the Father. You worship what you do not know. We know what we worship, for salvation is of the Jews. The hour is coming, and now is, when the true worshipers will worship the Father in spirit and truth, for the Father is seeking such to worship him. God is spirit, and those who worship him must worship in spirit and truth. The woman said to him, I know that Messiah is coming, who is called Christ. And when he comes, he will tell us all things. And Jesus said to her, I who speak to you am he. In this account, we read of Jesus having another meeting with another person. One of the reasons I love the Gospel of John so much is that it is filled with these narratives of encounters that Jesus had with various types of people from all walks of life. We've already seen the extended conversation that he had with Nicodemus, who not only was a Jew, but he was a ruler of the Jews, a member of the Sanhedrin. And now we get to eavesdrop on a conversation that Jesus has with a Samaritan, with a woman who was a Samaritan. And not only was she a female Samaritan, but she was a woman who obviously had a reputation for sexual immorality. And you have to understand that there were three things that didn't bode well for Jewish people. One was Samaritans. They didn't like Samaritans. Two, she was a woman. That's strike two. And third, she was a woman who had a reputation for sexual sin. So all three of these things set her in a category radically different from that of Nicodemus, whom we've already seen. And so we're told that he came to this city called Sychar, near that piece of ground that Jacob had given to his son Joseph. When Jacob gave his patriarchal blessing to all of the sons, it is mentioned at the end of the book of Genesis that this parcel of real estate was given to Joseph. And this was a very important piece of land because it contained this ancient site, this well that had been dug by Jacob so many years before. Now keep in mind that when Jesus meets this woman now by Jacob's well, almost 2,000 years have transpired from the time that that well was dug by Jacob, and now this woman is there at that same well, still drinking from it. 2,000 years later, it was considered something of a sacred site by people who trace their roots back to the Old Testament patriarchs. So in any case, we're told that Jesus, being wearied from his travel, came to the well and sat down, and it was the sixth hour. That means it's high noon. The hours start at 6 a.m., so the sixth hour means it's 12 o'clock. It's in the middle of the hottest time of the day in this desert region. And Jesus, in his humanity, and this is one of these marvelous texts that explore something of the reality of the human nature of Christ, he was tired. Not only was he tired, he was hungry, and now especially he's parched with thirst, and so he comes to the well. And so, Jesus is alone, and he speaks to this woman who came to draw water. Now, just a word on that. Ordinarily, the women of the village would draw the water either early in the morning or after sunset, not in the heat of the day. And they would get a day's supply of water for drinking, for bathing, and also for cleaning their utensils and their clothes and whatever. And normally, the women would come in a group to the public well to get their needed water for the day. That this woman comes at noon and that she comes alone tells us volumes about her social status in the community. She's obviously ostracized from the rest of the women and is something of a pariah that she has to come by herself in the heat of the day to get her water. And much to her surprise, this stranger comes to her and says, "Give me a drink." She recognized that he's a Jew, and she said, "How is it that you're a Jew, that you ask a drink from me, a Samaritan woman?" For Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. I don't know what your translation reads. It's a bad one there, unfortunately, because it's not true that the Jews didn't have any dealings with the Samaritan. They had all kinds of dealings with the Samaritans. In fact, Jesus had sent the disciples into town for a business transaction, a commercial involvement there, to buy foodstuffs from them. What they wouldn't do and what they were not allowed to do was to share eating utensils and particularly glasses or cups with the Samaritans because they were considered to be unclean. And this business of their having no dealings is a cue of the lengthy hostility that had gone on with the Samaritans and the Jews. And it had its roots deep in history. 400 years before this hostility was going on. After the Samaritans had been carried away in captivity in 722 by the Assyrians, and when they returned, they brought with them wives that they had married from the pagans. And so the Samaritans became, as it were, religious half-breeds. They entered into religious syncretism, intermixing the pagan rites of their neighbors with their historic religion. And they had violated the terms of the covenant of Moses. But Jesus goes and speaks to her and asks her for a drink. And Jesus answered her when she said that Jews have no dealings with Samaritans. He said, "If you knew the gift of God and who it is who says to you, 'Give me a drink,' you would have asked him. If you knew who I was when I asked you for a drink of water, you wouldn't give me the history of the social problems between the Jews and the Samaritans. You would have dropped everything and you would have said to me, 'No, please give me the drink.'" She said, "If you know who it was who said, 'Give me a drink,' you would ask him for a drink and he would have given you living water." She's puzzled by this. She says, "Sir, wait a minute. You don't even have anything to draw with. How are you going to give me a drink? You don't even have a bucket." And again, it was the custom of travelers in the ancient world, when they would go on journeys that would take them several miles, they would take a goatskin canteen or something to carry, or a goatskin bucket to retrieve water from wells or from wherever. And obviously, Jesus didn't have his. That was with the disciples in town. And she's looking at him. "You don't have any bucket. You don't have anything to draw with. How are you going to give me water? Not only that, this well is deep. About 100 feet. Where are you going to get this living water?" Now listen to this question. "Are you greater than our father Jacob?" "Yes." She can't believe that anybody would come along and talk to her who was greater than Jacob. "Are you greater than our father Jacob, who gave us this well, drank from it himself, as well as his sons and his livestock?" And how does Jesus answer the question, "Are you greater than Jacob?" And he answers it this way. He says, "Well, I grant that Jacob was a great man, and he's done a wonderful thing, giving you this well. It stood the test of time for 2,000 years. People come here every day, get their water. It's a terrific gift that Jacob gave. But have you noticed, this isn't the first time you've been here to get water. And if you drink from Jacob's well, you're going to have to come back tomorrow Because he said, whoever drinks of this water will thirst again. But whoever drinks of the water that I shall give him will never thirst. The water that I shall give him will become in him a fountain of water springing up into everlasting life. Here the language fails us a little bit too, because this living water of which Jesus speaks that will swell up or spring up means leaping up, that it's so alive, so dynamic, so energetic, so powerful, that not only will it assuage the thirst for the moment, but it'll begin to pour up out of the soul of the person something that continues to nurture day after day, year after year. And obviously, when Jesus is engaged in this conversation with this woman, he's using the common element of water as a metaphor to describe a spiritual reality. And he also, in this symbolic manner of speaking, speaks about thirst. This whole thing started because he was thirsty. And he met a woman who was thirsty. Now, if you can just let our imaginations go with us for a moment, how thirsty was this woman? How empty was her life? How empty was her soul? I don't mean that she was passionately pursuing the things of God, hungering and thirsting after righteousness. She obviously wasn't hungering after righteousness. You hear the statement all the time from people who are Christians. They talk about their friends who aren't Christians, and they'll say, my friend isn't a Christian, but my friend is seeking God. Or my friend is searching for God. All the while, the scriptures tell us that in our natural fallen condition, none of us ever seeks God. The quest for God doesn't begin until your conversion. Prior to your conversion, you're running as fast as you can and as relentlessly as you can away from God. So why is it that we see our friends and neighbors who aren't Christians and we say, oh, they're not Christians, but boy, they're seeking. They're hungry. They're thirsty. The best answer for that, I think, came from Thomas Aquinas, where Aquinas was asked that very question. He said, the Bible says no one seeks after God, and yet it seems to us that people all over the place are seeking after God. And Aquinas said, here's the difference. He said, we see people all around us desperately seeking for peace, desperately seeking for relief from their guilt, desperately seeking for something to fill the emptiness of their souls and of their lives. And we look at them and we say, from our perspective, we know that the only thing that's going to satisfy that hunger and that thirst within their souls is the living Christ. And so since they're seeking to have their thirst assuaged and their hunger satisfied, they must be seeking for God. Aquinas said, no, no, no. People desperately search for the things that only God can give them, while at the same time, they are fleeing from Him. Jesus knew all about this woman. He knew that the woman's life was bankrupt. She didn't stop trying to find happiness. 5 times she had been married. And every time she entered into marriage, she thought, this is the one that'll make me happy. This is the one that will last. But she was 0 for 5. And now she's living with somebody who's not her husband. Why is she doing that? Because she wants to be a bad girl? No. She's desperately trying to find happiness. She's so lonely. She's so empty. She's got nothing, no love. And she'll grab at anything that can satisfy her thirst. Jesus said, if you knew who you were talking to, you'd ask him and he'd give you water that's alive. Water that'll satisfy your thirst forever. Sir, give me this water that I may not thirst nor have to come here to draw. I hate it every time I come here. I feel like I have a scarlet A sewn to my chest. I have to sneak past the eyes of every woman in the village. When I come out here and sit at this place to get my water, I feel so ashamed, so embarrassed, so alone. If you have water like this, give it to me, and I'll never have to come back to this well again. Jesus said, go and call your husband and come. She said, I have no husband. She said, that's right, you don't have any husband. You've had five. The one you now have is not your husband. In that you spoke truly. So the woman said, sir, I perceive that you are a prophet. Brilliant deduction. But why did she have this perception? Because she just met a man that knew her entire life, went right through the facade and penetrated right to her heart and exposed her sin right then and there. You must be some kind of holy man. You must have access to knowledge that normal people don't have. I think she's scared to death. So the best defense she has at this point is to ask a theological question and kind of detour around her sin. Now, it's almost inevitable that there are people here this morning who have not yet tasted the sweetness of the living water of Christ Himself. There are people here whose souls are so thirsty, so empty. And what we're hearing this morning is about the one, and indeed, beloved, the only one who can fill that void in your soul.
You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition, with R.C. Sproul, as he takes us through the Gospel of John. No person in history has been the subject of such widely divergent assessments as Jesus of Nazareth. Some say he was a cunning fraud, while others say he must have been out of his mind. Who is Jesus? This is a question R.C. answers in a book entitled, Who is Jesus? This makes an excellent resource to give to your unbelieving friends. You can get your copy of the book, Who is Jesus? For a donation of any amount by calling our toll-free number, 1-800-435-4343. Once again, that's 800-435-4343. As part of the Crucial Questions booklet collection, Who is Jesus? Demonstrates the compelling evidence that Jesus was something more than the world's underestimation of him. He was, in fact, God in the flesh. By wrestling with the biblical titles for Jesus and the accounts of his life and ministry, Dr. Sproul unfolds the scriptural portrait of Jesus, the Son of God. To secure your copy of the Who is Jesus booklet for a gift of any amount, call us at 1-800-435-4343. No one is available to take your call today so that our staff may celebrate Christmas with their families. But please call back on Monday using our toll-free number, 800-435-4343. Or you can go online to rymoffer.com. That's RYM as in Renewing Your Mind, and the word offer.com. Again, that's RYMOFFER.com. That web address is for this week's special offer only. That'll bring a close to this Christmas weekend edition of Renewing Your Mind. Thanks for being with us. Join us again next weekend as Dr. Sproul continues to take us through the Gospel of John. Until then, you can keep up with us at our Facebook page at facebook.com/Ligonier. Ligonier is spelled L-I-G-O-N-I-E-R. Again, that's facebook.com/Ligonier. You're listening to Renewing Your Mind, Weekend Edition, the listener-supported radio outreach of Ligonier Ministries in Orlando, Florida.